A nice Monday afternoon here in the city of Chicago as we sit on Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio. If it's Monday, that means we'll talk to the folks from Chicago Inno about, I want to talk about a couple of Amazon stories in the news. But a little bit later in the program, we will meet Heidi, I think it's Broad, or Broad is her name. She is a screenwriter. She's a new novelist. She just has her first book out. It's called Seeing Red. But it's interesting. Heidi is sort of living in collision with a lot of what we're dealing with in this country right now. She also has a startup where she helps women sort of succeed in genre storytelling that typically has been men, whether it's science fiction or thrillers, things like that. And she worked at Miramax for 10 years with Harvey Weinstein. So we will talk to her about all of that. But we start with Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis here from Chicago Inno. Welcome to the both of you. Welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
All right. The weekend was pleasurable, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, boy, we're into fall, aren't we?
Yep, it's a big week, too, for cities that want to lure Amazon and their second headquarters to Chicago. Governor Rauner was on CNBC with a big interview. He did a big cheerleading interview earlier today. And, you know, it's inevitable. I tend to be a cheerleader as well. Come on, bring them on. But it's not all good news, right? You guys and the Business Journal did a study to look at all of the corporate tax breaks that Amazon gets and whether or not it turns out to be worth it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's no secret that tax incentives are going to be a big reason where Amazon decides to set up its second headquarters. And our parent company, the Business Journal, actually has been taking part in a 10-month investigation looking at the incentives, the taxpayer-funded subsidies that states across the country have been giving Amazon to help them expand and grow. They looked all the way across the U.S. and in total, taxpayers have kicked in $1.24 billion in subsidies and incentives to help Amazon grow its presence across the United States. This is a network of over 250 sorting and distribution centers. That's 141 million square feet it's got across the United States.
Right. What are the Illinois numbers? Do you have
that? Right. So they broke it down state by state, too. In Illinois, it's pretty interesting. So Illinois is given about $82 million in known subsidies. That's the fourth highest in the country. They are behind a couple of other states. Actually, South Carolina has given $100 million to kick it into Amazon. So that $82 million in subsidies has helped led to 15 facilities that Amazon currently has here with about 9,200 jobs.
I saw a Bloomberg piece a couple of weeks ago, too, that looked at the amount of income tax that different companies pay, and it depends on what they do with their money that they bring in, the revenue. And if you compare, say, Walmart to Amazon, it's not close. Walmart, which is a much smaller, as far as revenue, pays so much more in taxes than Amazon because they've figured out different ways to declare their money.
Yeah, exactly. And this incentive issue is going to be a really big deal, especially as we look at HQ2.
So the governor was on CNBC this morning and they said, well, with all your problems in the state, how can you afford to give more money away? And he says it's going to mean billions in tax dollars for Illinois. I don't know, Catherine, will that pay out, do you think?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, Amazon's definitely going to be looking at, who's giving subsidies. It's going to play a huge role in where they decide to put the next Amazon headquarters.
And but I mean, it seems as if we've got what they want. We've got the location. We've got the proximity to airport, education.
Boy, it really does feel like it's Illinois to lose.
But don't you think that most cities feel like they've got, well, we've got a great spot. It's right here, you know, next to the old Macy's store.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because I think it was Maryland just last week said that they are prepared to give Amazon the biggest incentive deal in the state's history, right? So, I mean, I think that everybody is really gearing up to give Amazon the red carpet treatment.
And this speaks to the story you started with, the fact that they have an ability to lure all these people, and they're all of these states and cities are fighting against each other to give away the most to have this company come in and make more money.
They say, I mean, the feeling is, you know, whatever the incentive is worth, it's worth much more to a city's economy to have 50,000 plus jobs, right? And these are, you know, high paying $100,000 jobs, right? And like this kind of opportunity doesn't happen to a city that opts. I mean, it's going to change the business landscape wherever it goes, and especially the technology landscape and the startup ecosystem wherever HQ2 lands.
Well, here's, I'll never learn to say HQ2. It's just too hard. Here's what I think is interesting, and it's sort of it's part of a bigger development. I mean, you've got Google that developed here just in the West Loop, and Facebook here, and Facebook now is expanding even further, right?
Exactly. Yeah, Facebook has announced or has got plans to really grow and really sort of triple down on its Chicago presence. It's adding 3 floors and about 100,000 additional square feet to its Wacker Drive office here in the city, potentially 500 more jobs.
And they've only got 80 people working here now.
Exactly. So, yes, Facebook has kind of sort of like quietly been operating in Chicago. They haven't been really touting their presence here. But really what they're doing is blowing up their space to really, really grow in the city.
So, Catherine, is all of this like a snowball rolling downhill, getting bigger and bigger?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, we saw Google. We see Google in the West Loop and then other like consumer tech companies like Twitter, Pinterest, Pandora, BuzzFeed, even Snapchat. They have offices here in Chicago and are hiring. So.
Does Chicago's activity when it comes to those social media sites compare? I mean, could Nashville say the same thing? Or does Chicago sort of stand above most other cities?
I think Chicago would stand before, you know, a city like Nashville just because it's bigger. We have a growing, thriving tech hub here.
The interesting thing to me, too, is that, I mean, Chicago typically is thought of as the sales hub for a lot of these companies. I mean, you know, Google did that, right? They needed sales roles, so they came to Chicago. But now even Google is hiring hardware engineers in Chicago, right? So not only are these just sales satellite hubs for all these major companies, there are, like, real tech-centric jobs that are happening here.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, though, you had to sit down with Chris Gladwin, who was the guy behind CleverSafe, right?
That's right.
Up to something new. It's kind of interesting. He doesn't know who he's going to sell, or he's not telling you who he's selling it to, or how much it costs, but he's just kind of having a kick doing it.
That's right.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, talking to the folks from Chicago Inno. They helped keep my mind clear, so I thank both of you for that. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke in the studio. Okay, Jim, you sat down with Chris Gladwin, who is a man of a particular pedicure when it comes to Chicago, and talked to him about his next project. Tell me about his most previous one and then where he is today.
Yeah, Chris Gladwin is probably, at this point, really one of the most successful tech entrepreneurs in Chicago that we've seen, you know, maybe ever. He is the founder of CleverSafe, a company he launched back in 2004 that was all about data storage. And so this is a company sold to IBM a couple years ago for $1.3 billion. So really a
huge
exit.
What was the statistic that he made? There were how many million?
Basically, in the equity structure he set up, that exit created 80 millionaires in Chicago. So that's the kind of thing that you really are going to look back on, I think, 10 years from now and say, wow, that was a really influential exit because those employees will invest in startups. They will create their own startups. It's the kind of exit that is going to be beneficial to Chicago for years and years to come.
Okay, I'm making you eat up time here. So what's going
on
now?
He's already on to his next thing. He barely took a minute off, and now he's on to his next startup, which is called Osient. So if CleverSafe was doing data storage, Osient is doing data analysis.
And so, but big data. Data that almost... He's preparing for data that doesn't exist yet.
Right. Most companies aren't even producing the amount of data that Osient is going to allow people to analyze, right? So he's planning for a future trend that is going to be much more necessary. So think about every new phone, every new device, every new airplane, everything that creates data today, the next version of it will create twice as much data and three times as much data. So we're only – the rate of data that we are bringing into the world is increasing exponentially. So Osient is going to help companies be able to analyze that data when it becomes so big, even much more bigger than it is today.
And Catherine, he's had a history of being able to identify future trends, right, and take advantage of them.
Yeah. We mentioned CleverSafe. That was one. Cruise was like a portable tablet he created, and that was 15 years ahead of the iPad. Music Now was half a decade ahead of before – iTunes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we might see a similar trend with that with Osient now.
But he's almost playing a game that doesn't have a ball yet. I mean, you know what I'm saying? He's preparing for something that sort of doesn't exist. He doesn't know how it's going to work or how it's going to be used, but he knows it's going to be.
So you think about the kind of the customers that CleverSafe had. The companies that have data storage problems are probably also the companies that are going to have data analysis problems. So this is where he told me the kind of idea was born, was while he was doing the data storage challenges, he realized that, oh, wait, not only are there going to be storage issues, there's going to be analysis issues as well. So he knows that, hey, there are going to be companies that are going to have more data than they know what to do with, and they're going to need a tool like Osient to be able to analyze
that. And he's a Chicago guy, right? Committed to the city.
Through and through, yeah. I mean, you know, Catherine mentioned Music Now. I mean, this was really the first digital music licensing company in the world. I mean, he was doing the digital the licensing before anyone else, you know, half a decade before iTunes was even around.
Catherine, you usually comment on how well I'm dressed. I know when you come in, I'm getting used to it now. But you wrote a piece, too, about this startup called The Groomsman Suit. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so they're an e-commerce suit and tuxedo shop designed for groomsmen when they're looking, you know, for that.
It's all about the bride.
Right, yeah. and so they originally launched in New York, but recently moved to Chicago because it's cheaper to run a business here. And, you know, they've seen some pretty impressive numbers as far as growth. They originally launched on Kickstarter, raised about $11,000 there. Last year raised about $100,000 and are expecting to get $700,000 in revenue this year.
So back in my day at the weddings, you know, you'd all go to the Sino formal wear and they'd measure you and then you'd get this polyester tux that you would wear. That's not what we're talking about. These are actual suits that you buy
cheap.
The suit, right?
Yeah, and they advertise that it's cheaper than the average tuxedo rental.
Which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They make the suits overseas and bring them back here.
Yes.
They've had growing pains when figuring out how to work the sizes with online sort of registration, but they've sorted all that out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a common issue with buying clothing online is you can't try it on before you do. So they have modules on their site that, you know, how to measure yourself, what sizes work for you, reviews from people who've bought the suits, how they fit them.
I think I read in your story that they've been in more than 300 weddings already.
Mm-hmm. Yep. More than 300 weddings.
And so the sky's the limit. $100,000 last year, but they're thinking of maybe $750,000 not far in the future.
Yes.
Can I just buy a suit if I want to? I mean, I don't have to be in a wedding, do I?
No.
I'm assuming they're...
You can buy them one at a time.
Yeah, I mean, I got married 2 years ago. We did the Men's Warehouse route.
Men's Warehouse, yeah, there you go. That's the equivalent today, right?
So, yeah, so it costs about $200 to rent a suit, so it's like kind of comparable in price, and you get to sort of keep it here.
And you don't have to return it hungover.
Exactly, yeah. That was a fun Sunday morning.
Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis. Read more at chicagoinno.com. Thanks for coming by, you guys.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll see you next week. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Okay, Heidi Broad has been telling stories for all of her professional life. As a former executive at Miramax, she worked on films like Shakespeare in Love and Gangs of New York. The founder of Story Production, she's working to develop female-driven content. But she's doing it in a new way this fall with a novel. Her first novel is called Seeing Red, and she joins us on a phone line now. Heidi, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. It is amazing if you look at different ways that your story is colliding with the real world in these days.
It's true. I mean, it's true right now, you know, having the lead character, Serafina, who is a victim in college and becomes empowered, is really just the number one story in the news. And I am so proud to have written a book that touches upon such an important theme.
I want to get to the novel, but allow me to work my way there in a way. This is a business show, so let's start with Story Productions. The description of it says that you work to foster female participation in genres dominated by men. What are we talking about? Writing thrillers, science fiction, or what are you talking about there?
That's right. This is a thriller, and you know, it's dark and it's intense, and I feel like we see this. It's a very male-dominated genre, and I wanted to tackle something that I thought would appeal to women, but also, you know, cross over and speak to men.
You know, but it seems as if there are more and more women who are writing this. I mean, I don't know if they're... I mean, do you think that they're sort of being shut out? One of the first writers I ever interviewed was Val McDermid, the Scottish writer, and then, of course, there's been Karen Slaughter, Patricia Cornwell, Gillian Flynn. I mean, so... There have been inroads in areas like that.
Yeah, it's for me, it's the genre I'm most passionate about, and I think what the question is in the company that I started, not only is it books, but it's also you know, I write treatments for TV and for film that I think are positive and inspiring, and where the women go through real trauma, real stories, and kind of come back to it and come to an empowering place. Gone Girl was one of my favorite movies, and these are all great writers that you're mentioning.
Yeah, so at Story Productions, then, do you consult with others, or is this predominantly your work and the work that you do?
You know, it's predominantly the work that I do. I'm also a story consultant, and I work with writers and directors, which is what I used to do for the Weinsteins over at Miramax. And I've been doing that probably for 20, 25 years now. And that's what I also love to do. So that's all sorts of genres.
You know, and
I work on everything.
And so I want to talk about this Harvey Weinstein and your work with him. But when it comes to that, so you've sort of seen it, certainly through the professional women's perspective. Have things... You know, because there always were jokes about the casting couch and the man's world in Hollywood. I had assumed that things had changed. I suppose it's possible that they have changed and that they're not where they should be now. I mean, is that the case? There is progress being made, is there not?
There is progress being made, and I think that the women that come forward and share their stories are very brave, and it's important to support them, and it's the first step for them towards healing and for change. But we really have a long way to go in terms of equal pay, you know, equal protection from sexual assault and equal rights. And I think that Hollywood and the casting couch really, it hasn't changed enough. And we have to keep fighting and working towards that, because we women deserve that, and women deserve to be in leadership roles, and there just aren't enough of them right now.
And here you are writing a book about a woman who was attacked and harassed and doing that several years after spending 10 years working with Harvey Weinstein. I mean, what was your reaction when all of that news came out?
You know, I worked most of my career at Miramax. I worked for Meryl Poster and Michelle Cuyate. They are both strong, empowering women. The last couple of years, I worked very closely with Harvey Weinstein because I handled theater for him. And, you know, he was always respectful during our working relationship. He is a creative genius and he loves story. However, I have to tell you, I was shocked to hear it. I knew that there were consensual relationships going on. And I'm not the first person to say that, but I did not know that, you know, the stories that are coming out now are really horrifying. And I think that a big part of seeing red is I've researched PTSD and, you know, really understand that the part of the healing is talking about it. And I'm so glad that these women who have gone through things are now coming out and connecting with other women.
Heidi, I want to ask you an unfair question. And it's this: do you feel implicated in any way? And the reason I ask that is because I feel like there have been all these fingers pointing now, like this person should have known, or he should have known, she should have spoken up. There you were with him. Have you felt that accusation at all?
I don't. I mean, there'll be a criminal trial for him, and they can determine whether or not there's guilt there. I had a really amazing experience at Miramax. I worked on incredible films with incredible directors, and I had absolutely, again, no idea that these things were going on. And my heart breaks. I mean, I'm concerned that, A, the focus isn't on the victims and their healing, and also I think the conversation needs to continue because it's still happening. It's still happening down the hall, and that's what needs to change. Equal rights, equal pay. These are all things that I want to start hearing the conversation move forward to.
And hey, I want to be clear. I don't think you're implicated. I just wondered if you had that feeling, because it seems like there's a lot of blame going around. Let's go to Seeing Red then. And here's the novel about a woman who was attacked in college. She has a child, and then she becomes a daughter. She becomes fiercely protective of that daughter. Lo and behold, that's you again. That happened to you. You were attacked, and then you came upon Harvey Weinstein in real life and then wrote a novel about it. I mean, so much of what's going on right now, you've lived through. How has writing this novel helped you?
You know, it's a great question. It took me 30 years to talk about the fact that I had been attacked in college, and I had flashbacks and anxiety and didn't know what to do with the feelings. And this book just poured out of me. I mean, I feel like it through sharing, it's fiction, through sharing some of those feelings I was stuck on, I feel like I was really healed, and I'm proud of the book. And, you know, I think on top of that, when you have a child as a mother, I definitely, all of a sudden you're concerned about things that in the past you didn't feel like were a danger.
Right.
And that for me was a little bit the inspiration behind coming up with a stalker. It felt like someone was after me because I was so protective over, you know, my child. And so I'm very proud of it. And I think it does speak to what's happening now, because for me, it was very healing to share my story.
The name of the
book out of my head.
It's out of your head and in the bookstores now. The name of the book, Seeing Red, the author Heidi Broad, B-R-O-D. Must feel good to walk by a store window and see your book in there.
Thank you so much. It really does. And thanks for having me on the show. I'm grateful. I appreciate that.
Hope we can talk again soon. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune and has her eyes on social media for us. Randy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, so I think it was yesterday afternoon I started going on Twitter, and I kept seeing, I saw a cousin of mine and then many other people had this hashtag #MeToo. And then it became sort of omnipresent. I have a suspicion of what it was about, but why don't you tell me?
Yeah, so unless you are living under a rock, you have likely seen the hashtag #MeToo somewhere on your Facebook and or Twitter feeds. And what this is women and men who are sharing their stories of sexual assault and sexual harassment. And this is kind of in response to the Weinstein thing that went on late last week.
So it's a reaction to how do people stay quiet and feel so alone? Everyone's now saying, feel a little more comfortable and saying, hey, it was me too. You're not alone.
Right, exactly. And so many people are survivors of such tragic events like these. And this is a really great way for women to let others, and men as well, to let others know that, you know, you're not alone. I've been there, without having to go too much into detail or to divulge anything that might be potentially harmful.
Do you think there's a concern that it could become diluted?
I think there's always that concern with anything. But, you know, kind of like the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, where the good might actually outweigh the
bad
trendiness
of it.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. And so that will take us to Twitter. This is just a delicious story to me. So Twitter suspended the account of Rose McGowan, who is one of the early accusers, most vocal accusers of Harvey Weinstein, right? And then
right.
they got into big trouble for that.
Right. She, the reason that her account was suspended, the official reason Twitter gave was that she shared a personal phone number on her account.
Whose number was it? Do you know?
I honestly don't know off the top of my head. The tweet was deleted by the time that I got
it. But it was someone's number who, well, my assumption is it was like, hey, this person is a bad person, give him a call.
Right, exactly. It was kind of like inviting a little bit of harassment or inviting
right.
somebody to kind of go out of their way to bug this person.
But of course, Twitter deletes her account. She's a vocal accuser, and all of a sudden it looks like she's being picked on again.
Right. So Twitter went ahead and suspended her account, and a large number of Twitter users said, hey, this isn't okay. We're going to go ahead and boycott Twitter.
Right, and so they boycotted for a while, and did it have an impact?
It did, actually. Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, came out and went on this little threaded Twitter rant, I guess not rant, spiel, for lack of better words, about how Twitter does need to step up and do
better. I don't know. Would you rather be accused of a spiel or a rant?
I don't know. I can get kind of ranty when I'm talking about the right topics. But so Twitter said, hey, you know, we understand that we do kind of have a Nazi problem on this platform, as well as a sexual harassment problem and, you know, a violence problem. We're going to try to combat that a little better going
forward.
Well,
let's hope they do, because they've said that before.
They have, yeah. So it's kind of an empty promise at this point, but I'm optimistic.
Okay, so here's my thing with this. Rose, you can't do that. The rules say you can't put out someone's personal number. Right?
Right.
So it should have been maybe just, I mean, so I don't think Twitter was altogether in the wrong for having done it. They might have been
right.
tone deaf.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if somebody threw my personal phone number out there, I would also hope that that tweet would
right.
be taken down.
Now, Donald Trump has clearly violated Twitter's rules of engagement as well. Twitter was
right.
called on it, right?
Right. And that's actually, Twitter has had to make a statement before about how, no, it will not take down Donald Trump's account.
Because they said he's a newsmaker.
Right.
So, and
right.
she, I think, in this case, was almost a newsmaker too. It shows how hard really it can be to try to
right.
to keep a line and to stay above and to
and
stay
even,
out of trouble.
And even with verification, you know, Twitter has verified various members of like the alt-right or self-declared white supremacists, and so it's kind of like, where do you draw that line?
Right. Right. Okay. Real quick, let's talk about Facebook too and how they are about to eliminate LinkedIn. Okay, maybe not quite that fast.
They're going to try.
Okay, what are they doing?
So this is a Business Insider piece about how Facebook is testing a new resume feature. Not a lot is really known about it. A few people have started to see kind of that little glimpse into, you know, when social sites test a new feature.
Okay, I can just see it. So then the college senior who's trying to get a job will post his resume next to pictures of him doing belly shots, that's not going to work.
No, it's not. And so that's another very good reminder that you should always watch your privacy settings on Facebook.
Or just don't do belly shots.
Yeah, or just don't post it on Facebook. But I'm also with you on the belly shots. That's kind of a hygiene thing.
But they are trying to put a wall up, right? These CVs would be posted somewhere apart from your personal
page. So they're trying to somehow kind of work it in. And again, this is still so new that I haven't even seen the feature at all. But from what I've been reading on it, they're trying to kind of separate it a little bit where you can make a CV that's incorporated into Facebook but is separate from your drunken.
And the threat to LinkedIn is Facebook is already everywhere. If
exactly.
they can do this and become the currency, it could be dangerous to LinkedIn.
Exactly. And I know that I'm one of those LinkedIn people. I really only use it if I'm looking for a job or something like that. And
never happens.
I'm on Facebook every day. So
Randy Schaefer, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Enjoy the rest of your week.
You too.